Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and good afternoon. This is Trish, your host for Topics with Trish, every Tuesday and Thursday afternoon at 4 p.m. on the Your Voice Radio Network. I want to thank you for tuning in, listening in. I apologize for the late login, having some technical issues here. The piece that I usually use, the headset that I usually use, unfortunately, I wasn't able to pick up any sound in, so I had to switch over to different headphones, log out, log back in, and try and get this thing going. Anyway, we are on the air. We are live. It is a gorgeous day outside, at least here in Southern Illinois, and thankfully I've had some great news I will be sharing with everyone as we go along. Remember, Your Voice Radio Network is a collective of different hosts in different locations talking about different issues. The Donna and Lee and Dr. Rose and myself, we want to thank everyone for tuning into our programs. We want to remind you that, of course, you know, it is an open format radio program, rated PG. But the most important thing about our radio program is that it is your voice that matters. If we don't have your voice to start with, you know, it becomes very, very difficult to be able to find balance and to be able to come together as a united organization and to work together in our country to make sure that we keep things as best as we can for our kids. I know we cannot give them a perfect world, but I do believe that they have a right to the best we can possibly give them, which means giving a voice and making sure that we try and keep the focus on them, that we try to keep our leaders speaking for them, because while they may be legislators over the constituency of our different states and our different areas across the country and the different special interests and everything else that we come across, most definitely, if we are not sharing your voice on these matters, then it's just us hosts here talking. And as you know, this past Tuesday, we started talking about crimes, gangs, drugs, death, and, you know, murder happening within our communities in the inner cities. And I told you that today we were going to be having a special interview with Miss Stephanie Mann. I believe she's on the line with me. Her patience has been wonderful. She's been holding while I've been trying to get the system up and running. Anyway, let's go ahead, rush right through things. You know, we have plenty of time, but since we are signing in late, I do want to go ahead and get Stephanie up here to talk with you as soon as quickly as possible. Now, I don't know how many of you might have checked out Stephanie Mann's information, which I had shared, I believe. You know, 39 years she's been a violence prevention and a crime reduction specialist. She and her partner, Dr. Barbara, have developed the Safe Kids National Network, And in that, they have developed a guide called Street Safe Kids. Now, Ms. Stephanie is a phenomenal person, having won the Distinct Women's Award. Her interviews have been shared on both on Fox, CNN, across the country, and I'm getting notifications about this law that we've been working on in Illinois, of course, our legislatures are putting that through now, and I'm getting, at this time, I'm still getting messages as to the press release that they're announcing today and who can they send it to and so on and so forth. Anyway, back to Ms. Stephanie Mann, I got to tell you, her career is longstanding. The organization that she has built and represents is a phenomenal organization, which I've been honored just to be connected with both her and Dr. Barbara, and even sit in on their national calls once a month and be hearing the different branches across the country of Safe Kids Now. I'm going to go ahead and share the Safe Kids Now website in the Your Voice Radio group. We are open for chat. And of course, your questions matter. So please, without anything further, let me go ahead and get her up here. Ms. Stephanie, if that is you on the phone, if you could press 1 so that I could bring you live on the mic. Right now, I'm not showing that you've connected. There we go. Fabulous. All right, here we go, everyone. Welcome, please, to Ms. Stephanie Mann. Hello, Miss Stephanie.
Hi, Trish. How are you? I was worried about you.
I didn't hear any.
No problem. I know we all have problems with electronic things. Here we are, and I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Yes, here we are. Thankfully, here we are. Okay, all right. So now I threw some of your profile and your history out there, but Stephanie, as I said, for me it's quite a huge honor to have connected and built a relationship with you. But Safe Kids Now, you've been doing that long enough, but your focus in crime prevention and violence prevention has been going on since 1978, is that correct?
Well, actually, 1976. So I've been hanging around a long time because we've got too many kids that are in trouble and too many kids that need more support and too many cities that have too much crime and drug problems and child abuse problems. And all of these issues are preventable. So that's why I've written all the books I've written. Because I know that we can do a lot better job, and if people are waiting for the new president to do Make America Great Again, that's not going to happen quite that way. It's going to be about we the people making America great again.
It is, that is so true. It is going to take, one person is not going to come into our presidential office and all of a sudden make all of our problems go away. I think, it's going to take work of the people and work in the each and every small community in able to make America that safe place for our kids again and for ourselves and kind of get back on our feet again. Just as much as we've got to rework our economic system and our justice system and our child protection system, which is the functioning of the inside the government and the laws and the services. I believe that as a people, we have to change the way of how we treat people and what we are treating, what we're teaching our kids. Because
Absolutely.
So much of what our kids are dealing with, I think, you know, let's take, for instance, the rioting. Now, they see the rioting going on. These are, you know, just a for instance in your expertise. You know, the kids that see these riots going on and see their parents out there protesting, and especially if it's a riot that gets violent or whatever, how do you think, how does that come across to a child? What is it worth showing them in those moments?
Well, I think all of us are concerned about the inner city violence that we've seen in Chicago and Baltimore and Ferguson and other cities. And many people want more gun control, and others say, no, we got to have more police. Well, to tell you the truth, we don't need more of that. I can tell you how to reduce crime in the inner cities, which cost, now, just gun violence alone, cost taxpayers $229 billion a year. We could cut that down, and we could cut it in half within 5 to 10 years with less funding and less police. But there is a catch, and that means we need to have city leaders doing a much better job of strengthening families. And I write about this quite a bit, about how we need coordinators.
Yes, yes. Oh, you've got
in our inner cities.
You've got so many.
Yeah, we need help. People need help. You know, when kids see the violence, and when parents see the violence, they do exactly the wrong thing. What they do is lock up. They get a gun to protect themselves, and they think that, you know, maybe crime will go away. No, that's not how it goes away.
Right.
They're doing exactly the wrong thing. They have to connect with neighbors. They have to talk about what's going on in their neighborhood. And they have to work with the police. The police, and most people don't know this, but the national average is 2.5 police officers for every 1,000 citizens. It doesn't even make sense to assume that the police can keep you safe. Who can keep you safe is the collective neighborhood working together, knowing what's going on in the neighborhood. For example, if there's sex trafficking in the neighborhood, if there's drug dealing in the neighborhood, neighbors know this, but they need to work with neighbors.
That's the part I don't get. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, well, let me give you a little example of how to stop that.
Okay,
I was coordinator for our county, and we had a lady come into our office, and she was very upset because the city council had just voted to fence off the park because they didn't have enough police resources to get rid of the drug dealers. So that was a solution they had at that time, to just fence the park and to keep the drug dealers out, which made Barbara crazy. She said, I want a safe park. I want the police to do something about this, and I don't want it fenced off so nobody can use it. So we suggested to her that she get her neighbors involved, and without being noticed, water their grass or walk the dog or play chess in the park, take down descriptions, take down license numbers of what was going on. And within 3 months, after turning this information over to the police, the local police, the park was cleaned up. See, police need information. The only way you get information is from the citizens, because the police can't possibly be there. So within that 3 months, they got the park cleaned up. The drug dealers were gone because the police had arrested them and the customers. And the neighbors went back to city council, and they said, you know, we got rid of these drug dealers. We want the money that you used for that fence to be used for new swing sets for the kids, and we want also some tables and benches. Well, their request was granted. So not only did the neighbors take back their park, but they had a much better park, and they were much more involved in the park, and they began to plant flowers and take care of the park themselves. So it's about individual responsibility. If you want a safe neighborhood, you need to take a leadership role or get together with your neighbors and as a group take a leadership role and make that happen.
Wow. You know, I mean, that is such a perfect connection of what we are seeing. I mean, I'm blessed, you know, I live in
Tricia, I can't hear you very well.
Can you, is that
Trish?
Better?
Okay,
a little bit.
Moment. Go ahead.
1 moment. Okay. I'm telling you, these headphones are giving me such an issue. Is that all right?
No, it's still very, it sounds like you're in a tunnel.
Okay. And it shouldn't sound like that at all. All right. Let me get my other headphones out here. I keep switching back and forth. And sorry. I'm not sure which ones are working. Apparently, these ones are. Anyway, do this real quick here.
Can you hear?
Oh, that's much better.
Stephanie?
Yes, I can hear you.
Good. Okay, great. Yeah, I'll just stick with this headset. All right, so anyway, you know, we see that our neighborhoods, I live in a rural community, but now, you know, just 4 miles away from me, they are already getting reports of heroin involvement and heroin deaths, teens, vandalism, that kind of thing. And it's a very quiet rural area. I've lived and grown up and raised my kids in a quiet rural area most of my life. Now, I know that with the inner cities, the people that I work with that are over in St. Louis, East St. Louis, these are environments that are swarming. You know, they're much like Chicago's West Side and South Side, mm-hmm. where they are getting a child is getting murdered by a stray bullet on average once a week. These kids can't go out and play. If you go into these neighborhoods, you are crossing boundaries and you are in the middle of a Wild West shootout, especially late at night or in the evening time, because these gangs and the drugs and the trafficking and territory and corners and dominance that they put over. Now, we always say, you know, well, what's the problem? Why aren't people reporting? There's a lot of reason.
Right.
Don't you think as to why? What are some of those reasons that might stop someone from reporting things like this?
Well, fear, retaliation. Mm-hmm. People are worried that, if I rat on my neighbor over here who's creating these problems, they're going to retaliate against me. And drug dealers or somebody that's a criminal in the neighborhood even spreads rumors about cops, about dirty cops, so that mm-hmm. They keep their network of support around them that won't report them or will not rat on them. So the people are in a bind. What they don't realize is that it's a very small percentage of people that are creating these problems. And if they work together,
yeah, right.
They could
yeah.
Squash this problem in a relatively short time. But as long as they are not united and talking to each other and addressing specific issues, the problem continues. And so when you get out of balance, you have too much police power in a neighborhood, and the people feel powerless. What you're looking at is a system here that is out of balance, and people get angry about that. They feel powerless. They feel like they are the victims. And, of course, the bad guys spread the word that, you know, the cops are the problem. So now you're looking at the cops and blaming them. This is a big problem, but if you understand the problem, you can stop it. And that is what we need to get out to people, that as a united front, they have all kinds of power. I can give you another story here. We had a call. I was working for Oakland PD, and one neighborhood man had a drug dealer on one corner and a liquor store with prostitutes on the other corner. And he had his daughter, Prestina, and he was very worried about her safety. So he wanted some help. What do I do about this? So I got to meet him, and we talked about what he needed to do, and he got his neighbors together. Now, he had probably 20 neighbors that really wanted to see things changed, but they didn't know what to do about it. So he got them together, and they started taking down notes and reporting and gave the information to the police, and they were able to get rid of the drug dealer. They were able to get rid of the prostitutes on the block, and as a matter of fact, last time I saw them, they were working on getting rid of the liquor store because they thought that was a real problem in their area. So they were taking their power back. What we have to understand is citizens have to take back their own power because they have the power to turn their communities, I don't care how bad it is, they have the power to turn those communities around and make sure that their kids are safe.
I believe that there's really such a huge responsibility on the adults within each community. You know, I was talking a little bit about the, of course, you know, the stigmatism that surrounds the projects. Now, if our police are out there and they are profiling, all right, to try and get drug dealers off the streets, okay, my thought is rather than going after, you know what those people standing on the street corners are doing. You know that those little 10, 12-year-old kids are running drugs back and forth. You know what's going on there. So let's stop the traffic coming through that area to pick up those drugs. Let's stop the flow, because so long as there's those customers, there's no way we're ever going to be able to take that out of those communities. But if we start looking at, you know, the white person in the Malibu who's driving around at 2 o'clock in the morning or even 10 o'clock at night through the housing projects, we know what they are there for. Mm-hmm. If they're in these neighborhoods, we know why they are there. So pull them over. Let them know that the police are watching those corners. Take them down one corner at a time if you have to. As citizens, as neighbors, as, you know, as law enforcement, if we start looking at the long end of this and reverse that, we know what those people are doing. Like I said, let's go after the customers who are grabbing and getting out of there so that they don't get in trouble.
And that's where the you know, citizens come in and take down license numbers.
Exactly.
There are nighttime patrols that citizens have done that have been very effective. And they've even put pictures and made articles in newspapers. Get the cooperation of your newspaper. And focus on these customers because they are tearing down your own neighborhood. And there's no excuse for it, and it can be stopped. But we're all going to have to understand that it starts with us as individuals, that we can't just sit back and hope
taking
that somebody else takes care of this problem.
Yeah.
I have seen
a lot of
mental health problems as a result of this social isolation that happens in these communities. It drives people crazy not to have a network of friends, not to have their children involved in different activities, allow their... I mean, that's healthy to have all of these support systems around children. the minute you stop having anything, you don't have any support systems except going to school back and forth, kids get into gangs. Why wouldn't they? That's all they see. It's going to be the people that change this.
Especially if the home is a little bit disruptive or there are bad behaviors going on at home, addictions, anger, violence, maybe abuse, maybe forced servitude, that kind of thing. If those kinds of environments are at home and the kids are struggling to get through school, okay, I just want to get my grades and get my education. So at school, they're really trying to focus, but they are going to an inner city school district where the teachers are not equipped and cannot handle 30 kids in a classroom, gang members and you know, young trafficking persons and the drug dealers. That they can control it on a certain level, but that intimidation that you are in that classroom with this gang member or this person who's associated with that gang, so on and so forth, you can't do anything at school. So then you got to go home. And, you know, we hear more and more in the headlines, you know, there was an 11-year-old girl shot in Chicago by a stray bullet and killed already this year. There has already been a death of, I believe it's a 6-year-old girl in St. Louis, again, by a bullet that struck her on a drive-by situation that was meant for somebody else. It happens all the way across the country, in Chicago, in Los Angeles, New York, you name it. If there's, you know, we have it in Belleville. Belleville's just a relatively kind of a rural city type environment, but I can't believe how the East St. Louis drugs and gangs have filtered into what used to be a very nice place to live and raise your kids. But, you know, I had friends who had young kids in school over in one of the school districts there, and it was a great school district until the kid got into about fifth grade, and all of a sudden everything started changing. Gangs and bullying and things that were going on, and he could hear gunshots at night, and they had to move. There was no option because there just wasn't enough that he could do, because his only thought is, I got to protect my son. You know, I got to get him out of here. And we, you know, I know that people do, if possible, you know, yeah, I'll just pick up and move and I'll go, but we can't always do that. So, you know, accountability,
yeah.
Right, okay, especially in these economic times, right?
Right.
So accountability, you can't keep your children with you 24/7. They
have
to grow up.
That's exactly why I wrote Street Safe Kids. And I
yes.
wrote it because so many children do not know how to find their spiritual center. And by that I mean everybody has a conscience. Everybody has intuition. Everybody has instincts. We are not talking to our children about how to use their instincts and how to live by their conscience, which can protect them. I wrote the book because I worked with the homeless for 4.5 years. And every single one of those men that were in our group, our class, that was homeless, they had horror stories to tell about their being raised in abusive homes, being
mm-hmm.
raised with violence, witnessing
and not
violence,
being
seeing
lost
their mother.
And feeling lost, right?
Oh, yes. And some of them were locked in closets. And, you know, this made me think, now, why do some people, and this does happen, why do some people survive and thrive,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
even though they have been in horrible situations, and why do some
mm-hmm.
people turn to drugs and escape and die or commit suicide?
Right.
And I didn't know the answer to that question. So it took me quite a long time to evaluate and see what they didn't learn. As a matter of fact, I worked with Mother Wright in a park. It was called Old Man's Park at that time. She fed the homeless every Saturday, some 300 people. And one day we didn't have enough food, servers, for the food that we had. And so she asked somebody to come out of the line and help serve food. And I was already there as a volunteer and serving the food. And this young man came out of the line, and in the course of serving all these people, we kind of talked and got to know each other. And when we got finished, he said, "I need some help. Can you help me?" And I thought my immediate reaction was, "Oh, he probably wants money, or maybe, you know, he wants food." I didn't know what he wanted, but I listened to him. And we met every Saturday for an hour for about 2 months. And I learned from him what he didn't know. And these were things that I taught my children when they were 5 and 6 years old. Really basic stuff that, you know, how to handle your anger, how to handle a bully, if something bad happens to you, how do I react to it? How do I develop self-control? And I put it into a 10-step book, and I'm offering anybody that's listening 20 tips free, 20 tips to nurturing responsible, safe, healthy kids. And if anybody would like a copy, all they have to do is go to streetsafekids.org and just sign up, and we will send you a copy. And we'll also go into greater detail on the blog about each step so that you know how to empower your kids, because empowered children are not victims. They don't commit suicide. They don't take drugs. And you would be surprised how many of the children in our inner cities are strong and resilient, and nobody ever talks about that. We teach we're going to go through this step by step so that everybody that's signed up can learn for themselves, if they haven't already taught these children how to be spiritually centered and not be a bully and not be a victim, but be strong within themselves. We're going to tell them, show them how to do that, and also to find the networks of support they need in order to empower their kids. So you're not a victim. Nobody is a victim unless they want to be. They can take charge of their kids' lives and their own lives and step out of the shadows, connect with other people. Do not make yourself a target, but, you know, a gang can retaliate against one person, but not the whole neighborhood. Not, you know, keep a low profile. Anyway, exactly. There's a lot of things that people can do to take back their neighborhoods and to take back their families and empower their kids.
And working directly with their kids is so important.
It's critical. It's absolutely critical
because
if you're listening to the media, the media gives them a steady dose of violence, gun violence, and you need to take charge of what these children are hearing, and be their role model, be their hero. We had a man named AJ Jelani in his neighborhood. He saw that there were many single moms on the block. And he became the father confessor for these boys in the neighborhood. And he started Christmas on the Streets, and he got the whole neighborhood involved. They built a sleigh for the kids, you know, to have Santa Claus and have their pictures taken. They all donated food. They tipped in and had presents for the kids at Christmas that ordinarily wouldn't get.
Right.
So what he was doing was being the new role model for 29 kids on his block, and now they are returning to thank him for keeping them out of the gangs. I mean, maybe most of us can't do that, but we can
what
at least know
reward.
The kids on the block. I'm sorry?
Oh, absolutely. I said, you know, what? It just a huge influence that even that certain little step during the holidays of giving the, you know, I grew up knowing those holidays that you never ever got a Christmas gift.
Yeah,
and depending on the local churches to bring by Christmas. So, you know, and get that one gift from the church that they were dropping off. Anything like that for a kid on a birthday, on a holiday, to make them feel equal to what is going on in the other neighborhoods around them that maybe they can't get to or that their parents don't take them to or, you know, they don't have access to. It's important that our inner city kids feel that same ability and know, I'm a believer that one positive person in a child's life can make a huge difference.
Absolutely.
In how they survive their world. Just one positive person.
I've had kids even say that to me. Nobody cared. Nobody cared. Well, if you care, then reach out to these children. Stop and listen to them. Ask questions. Let them know that you care about them. That's what kids need the most. They don't need big things. They need you. They need parents. And if the parents aren't there, be a friend. Be a friend. And children respond. But if they have no one, believe me, somebody else
They're
will take over
lost.
Their life for them. They will become
Absolutely.
A gang member.
You know, they will definitely get caught up in it. They will get lost in it.
Yeah.
Because
they will
get
absorbed
in it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's somebody that cares about
you know,
them.
They need something. They need something to go to. And because we all need something. Right, yeah. These are predators that are going to, you know, and, you know, I've talked to foster parents who tell me, you know, yeah, you know, I've got these kids and they're coming to stay with me, but the life that they went through, and I want to give them, you know, and most of these are grandparents, and they're hurting that these are their grandkids, and that their grandkids have lived any form of these negative influences, being absorbed into the gangs and pushing drugs or having their parents be so high that they actually forget about them. And don't take care of them, and just a massive, massive pain. And these kids are so triggered, even driving by their old neighborhoods. They freeze, they panic, they you know, because they didn't have anything in there except for the negative. Nobody was that positive role model. Now, let's go on. The Street Safe Kids Guide that you talked about, I shared a link in our Facebook radio group for the Safe Kids Now National Network site, as well as the step guide for the Street Safe Kids. I know that you offer that out, you know, for people who want to sign up and who want to get involved or who want to get started with this. Let's switch this up a little bit. You know, on the show the other day, I was looking at some juvenile justice reports. And on the national average, the national juvenile justice site that I was looking at said that we have an estimated 4,200 youth under the age of 17 in adult prisons. Their crimes are so bad that they didn't go to juvenile. Mm-hmm. You know, this is murder. This is manslaughter. This is like the little 12-year-old girls who took their friend out into the woods and beat her to death and left her there. And, you know, whenever asked by the court, why would you do this? Her answer was, I wanted to see what it would feel like. You know,
what she's really saying is, I want people to feel the pain I've been feeling.
That's what I think on that. You know, they're what sucks.
Yeah, these are children that have been horribly abused, and we don't hold parents responsible. These are children that feel that
they've got nothing.
Life
else,
isn't
right?
really worth living. They have no conscience because nobody has helped nurture their conscience, and the conscience is to protect them. So, you know, if you shut down your conscience. Yeah, if you shut down your conscience, you can do just about anything. If you've got enough pain in your life, a lot of young people commit suicide
today.
Right?
Yeah.
They don't want to live. Mm-mm. And that is a reflection on adults today. That is a reflection on parents.
You know,
so unless we get a grip.
My age that are in their 50s and parents that are 40 and parents that are 30, you've got a huge, huge influence. Even parents as young as 16 years old. You know, I know that you are they're in a bad situation. I get that. But there are, sometimes it's as if they're living like there are no services available to them whatsoever. Like this is what they're stuck in. And rather than think about the, you know, well, they're thinking, so what, you know, yeah, my daddy, my husband went to prison. I went to prison. You know, my kid's out there being raised by his grandma or by his auntie or, you know, whoever. And it's not a big deal to them. It's been such a huge cycle. It's been a generational conditioning of life inside these types of areas. And it's like that no matter where you go. It life conditions.
Well, and it's growing,
Trish.
It's growing.
Yes.
We need to stop this in its tracks, and it can be stopped, but we need responsible city leaders. We need churches, synagogues to reach out and support neighbors. What if every church in your community, how many churches do you have in your community? Everybody think about that. How many churches in your community?
Exactly.
And in a lot of cities have a church on every other corner. Well, what if they all adopted just the block around the church and helped the kids right around them?
Yeah.
Love thy neighbor is one of their tenets of the church.
Yep.
And if they did that, and, for example, in Oakland, California, there are 563 churches. That would be 563 neighborhoods that they could save. Well, that would make a huge dent in the violence in any city. I don't care whether it's St. Louis or Chicago or Detroit. It's going to be the people that reach out and help others that are making the difference. And that is already happening in many areas. We've got a lot of churches doing great work, but I'm saying if they reach out and adopt the neighborhood around the church that may not even know those people. And we have a little booklet called 10 Steps to a Safe Neighborhood, and it teaches you how to do it. It's pretty hard to go up to the door and say, hi, we're from the church, because they may slam the door in your face. But what if you're doing a survey? What if you're doing a survey and you ask just three questions? You say, hi, I'm in the neighborhood, and I want to learn more about what you're concerned about. So could I ask you three questions? Practically everybody says, sure, yeah, go ahead. And one question would be, have you been a victim? Some people will talk for a long time about being a victim. Mm-hmm. Or they may say, no, I've never been a victim. What is your biggest concern in the neighborhood? Well, we have a pothole here. I don't like that. Or we've got a drug dealer down the block. We don't know unless we ask. And then the third question is, will you help? And the person that says, oh, yeah, I'll help bring the neighborhood together. You may only get three people that'll say that out of a neighborhood of 10. Or 20 people, 20 houses. Mm-hmm. But those three people are the ones that can change the neighborhood. So we have a booklet on that. If anybody wants that booklet, all you have to do is go to our website.
Now, right? which is on the Safe Kids Now National Network.
Yeah, safekidsnow.com. And we have booklets. We have all kinds of information to help you your neighborhood, and stop tolerating this bad behavior all around us. We had one neighborhood where two little boys were acting out. They were 7 and 9 years old. They were smashing mailboxes. They were pulling up flowers. They were dumping over garbage cans. They were bullying the kids on the block.
Just little brats. Yeah.
Yeah, and everybody was fed up. One woman said, I told that mother to get her kids under control. And she said she slammed the door in my face. Another man said, well, I called the cops. And the cops talked to the mother and the kids, but nothing changed. Well, what do you expect the police to do with a 7 and a 9-year-old? That's all he can do.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so finally they said, well, now wait a minute. These boys are headed down the wrong path, and we know it. So let's send over to the house to talk to the mother, our most tactful people that say, you know, we want to help you. How can we help? They did that. The mother burst into tears and said her husband had left her. She was, she was on her own. The boys were out of control, and she didn't know where to turn. Well, the neighborhood took the boys under their wing. And I ran into her about 10 years later, and I said, well, how are the boys doing? And she said, oh, I could not have done it without my neighbors. She said, one is in college, and the other one is doing well in high school. And I said,
isn't that amazing?
Well, that's what used to happen. That's what used to happen. Mm-hmm. People used to care about each other. They used to help if there was somebody having a problem. They didn't just ignore them and scold them and get angry with them.
Right.
They said, how can we help? And that is what is going to turn families around, and it's going to turn children around.
I think that, pardon me, under the new administration, I know that a lot, it's happening right here in Illinois now, with our extreme economic budget crisis that we're having here. More and more services and more nonprofits. Well, of course, their funding is being cut. So their availability to reach out, I have a mixed feeling on this because 2 years ago, I did an interview with an incredible woman, Maria DeBari out of New York. And she had done a long study on the domestic violence shelters and the shelter services in her little area of New York, and the fact that, CEOs were living on these six-figure salaries and victims were being turned away. Victims were being told, you know what, stay with your old man or stay where you're at because, you don't have an education, you don't have the ability to get a job, we don't have anything available to help you with. When you have really phenomenal services, which the majority of them are really good quality services, when they reach out in the neighborhood to those families, and I think that it has to, start with the schools and start with the churches because the schools have that constant everyday communication with these kids. If they see a problem, Tommy and Jane are really starting to slip downhill. I don't know what's going on with them. It's not something that they should just put aside. It's something that somebody needs to gather a few of these students together and let them see that they're all really going through a very familiar situation and find out what it is that they want to help them and their families find what they need. I think that if we started in schools and work our way out, and then, of course, the problem is summer. Summer vacation, 3 months long. Nobody's around with these kids. Parents are working. then I think it's even worse, but I'm seeing more and more of the juvenile justice system being overcrowded with kids. There was over a million kids under 17 arrested in the U.S. in 2014. Mm-hmm. You know, and for various crimes, you know, I mean, 3,300 of those were for murder, manslaughter. You know, 3,600 of them were for rape. These are really stepping in and aggravated assault, armed robbery. These are the types of environments that these kids are already conditioned to live in and try and survive with their, you know, little 10, 12, 13, 14-year-old mind when everything is very influential with them and they're getting their feet on the ground. And as you said, there is no center. There is no center inspiration to find their own strength. And, you know, I know that your book is focused on that. But if someone, you know, what else would you tell someone looking to make that connection with the kid who they can see is struggling or maybe caught up or maybe it's a family member or it's a kid on a corner, but they see these kids so lost? Should they call the police?
No.
Should they involve the police?
I would not suggest that. Depending on the age of the child, I mean, if the child is a teenager and out of control, yes. But if it's a young kid, young child, they need to be heard. A lot of times they're not heard. Let me give you one of the suggestions on this free 20 tips that I mentioned to you. Designate a special listening stool in the kitchen or in the family room. When a child sits on the stool, everyone has to stop and listen. Children need to know he or she is being heard. That suggestion came when I was attending a neighborhood meeting, and they started talking about children being out of control, and she said, "This is what I have done. It reduces all attention in the house. The boys were fighting among themselves." And she said, when they sat in the chair, everybody had to stop and listen to what they were angry about. And she said, it got to the place where now I sit in the chair and they have to listen to me. So, you know, it's about being heard. It's about caring enough to stop and listen. And it's about addressing some of the fears. You know, anger is about fear. When children are angry, they're fearful. They're struggling. That should be a message to everybody. You know, this child needs to be heard. What's going on in their life? And the minute you start punishing kids for speaking out or talking or not being heard, you got a bigger problem coming up later.
Forever. Yeah, you'll shut them down, and the life pattern cycle continues, and it's definitely not a good one. Now, as we work towards our close of the show, now I know that you and Dr. Barbara have done fabulous work and are pushing this, but you've got a lot of great organizations that are part of Safe Kids Now, and those are across the country. The one that I really, really just admire so much is, of course, Terry Boykins with Street Positive.
Right.
And his connection with fathers
and
daughters.
He's trying to reconnect fathers with their kids. And boy, do we need more men. I mean, really, we need more men, especially for our boys. Because boys, women don't necessarily have the same attitude and ability to empower boys the way men do. For example, when I was a little girl, my grandmother had a farm, my grandfather, and my mother was just you know, don't let her get on the tractor. Don't let her get on the collar bus. And I was 8 years old.
So
the minute we got away from the house, my father said, here, I want you to drive the tractor. And I'm going to work on the Columbine. And, you know, that is kind of the difference between men and women empowering their kids. Because I always knew that if there was, if I hurt myself, my mother was there to give me sympathy. My father, I broke my elbow, and my father made me hammer nails so that I would get my arm strength back. And she had to leave the room because I was crying. So you can see there's a huge difference between what men do with their kids and what women do with their kids. And it's especially important for boys, because boys do not need to be pampered. They need to know that they can experiment. My grandsons came over and with my son, and we had a leak in the roof. And my son said, okay, we'll take care of it. And he got some plastic. And the boys, who are 15 and 12, got up on the roof. It was raining. And I'm going, what are you doing? You can't do that. The kids might slip and fall. And he said, don't worry. They're fine. They know what they're doing. And they got up and they put the tarp over the chimney and put some bricks around it so it wouldn't leak. So, you see, my reaction was, I would not have let him do that. But he said,
because we're women,
you know, you can do it. You can do it. And the boys know they can do it. They're skiers. They can do all kinds of things that a lot of mothers might say, oh, I don't want them to do that. So we as parents, we need our men to help us with boys especially. But they need their daughters too, because, you know, men give a – you don't want women, girls – marrying the wrong kind of guy. You want a strong, moral man in your life so that she will be see him reflect that and marry a strong, moral man. And that gives you a strong, moral family. We have a breakdown in the family today. We have a lot of weakness. We have a lot of children that are out of control. And we better get our act together. And we better start caring more about the children.
You know, sometimes as a parent, number one, you are not their best friend. You know, you have to be a parent. It is your job. And that's the way that I look at it. You know, I remember the first time that my little 9-year-old son, or I think he was 11 at the time, looked at me and told me that he hated me. Oh, my God, it crushed me, right? And then my middle child came along, and she got to be, you know, it's a girl, a little bit more dramatic, and, you know, it's starting whenever she's like 10. I hate you. And then, of course, I have my third child. So by the time I get to my second and third child, it doesn't even bother me. You know, my poor little third child, it doesn't crush me. It doesn't do anything. I look at her and I say, it's not going to be the last time you hate me, but it's going to be okay.
So you got the message. kids push your buttons. That's, you know, kids are also teachers. They teach us patience as parents. If you can't control your emotions around your kids, you got a big problem, because the kids are teaching us how to handle our emotions, and we bounce off each other, you know. So kids are a great asset to the family. They're not blank slates. They all have their own independent personalities.
Independent.
And they're all totally different. One child may be shy, and one child may be a bully, and you got to push one out the door, and you got to pull the other one in and say, no, that's not how we behave.
Yeah.
So, you know it's not easy raising kids.
It is not. And if you are a single parent, it is even more difficult.
Exactly.
Because you've got to be that single parent household to where not only are you working all the time, but you're the only one who's cooking and cleaning and keeping the kids' homework done and trying to get them some kind of a breakfast to get them out the door, to get them to school. Or maybe you don't have enough food and maybe they are going for, days without not knowing what's going to be there to eat because the welfare check or whatever it is. Schools do have assistance. Every kid gets assistance through the schools. But, you know, that would be a perfect thing for community churches and, you know, to rally around and check their families in their neighborhoods. Do you have enough food? We've got this little bit, or here's a voucher that we can give you for at least a couple of days worth of dinner. Those types of little measures give a huge helping hand. And I know that there's a lot of, you know, single parents out there, especially women who come out of abusive relationships. They are isolated. They don't trust anyone. They don't have any help. They don't have any support. They don't know what to do with themselves. They have no clue as to how to balance out everything. I know because I went through it myself, and I see my daughters going through it. And I see young women today at colleges and in my neighborhood that are struggling. And all I can think about is, wow, you know, what would be the thing that you could do for these kids? Feeding them is huge, because today, you know, I'm sorry, but women, girls, younger ladies are not raised with the same type of domestic focus as what you and I were.
Right.
The cooking skills and the housekeeping skills. You know, no, it doesn't have to be a high priority OCD thing, but, you know, getting medical care and dental care and keeping your kids checking their homework every day and spending that hour with them as a group. I did it with my three as a group at the kitchen table every night after dinner. That's what we did.
That's important.
It was
really important.
Yeah, you know. We had dinner and we, you know, I cleared the dishes. Okay, everybody get your homework in here. Let's go. You know, it was a family thing that we did. But, you know, I had kids that graduated with 4.0 and 3.86 or in that range. And, you know, thank heaven for that. If I wouldn't have done that, it would not have happened that way. They would not have that ability today. And that's just my example of it. But I know I didn't have the technology addictions that people have today. They're always on their phones. They're not paying attention to their kids. Pardon me. Then their kids are wanting all of these, iPads and the most recent cell phones. And
Trish, it's such a distraction from what's
process.
Really important. Because kids need input from adults around them. They need to listen to their adults and their grandparents. Everybody needs to have that network of support. And for people just to sit around and, you know, go to their computers or to the television or the iPhone or whatever, that can destroy the family. And people sit around and wonder, what happened? Why is my kid in so much trouble? Well, it's because you didn't pay enough attention to them. You didn't give them the tools that they need. And that's why I wrote these 20 tips for nurturing responsible, safe, healthy kids. Because a lot of people they don't know what they need to know on how to nurture responsible kids. So we got to get a message out to everybody that children need your time and attention.
They do. They do indeed. And they need a community standing behind them that's ready to rally together, help them, help the families before something serious happens. A lot of times you know, we don't hear about it until CPS and the national news and the police are all involved. And by then, the family's all ripped apart. If we can catch them early and help them early, they have such a better future and a better chance at building a strong bond as a family.
That's why I said
that inner strength and that balance together.
It would take 10 years to reduce this $229 billion price tag that we're all paying for the gun violence, and most of it is, you know, youth related.
Right.
And if we don't stop this, it's not about the gun as much as it is about the family, what
Indeed.
The families are doing. Why are they so fearful that they want to buy a gun? We already have 310 million guns in circulation. I had one high school student tell me it would take him 20 minutes to find a gun if he wanted one.
Right.
And it is. They're prevalent. So we're not going to get rid of guns anytime soon. So we better focus on what we can do right now, today.
Strengthen the families within strengthening our kids' inner spirit and helping them develop the confidence in themselves that they can
exactly.
get through this without going to the gangs and the drugs and ending up in the juvenile system and then in the adult prison system or in a rehab facility somewhere from the drugs
or they commit suicide.
Unfortunately,
yeah,
committing suicide. Or unfortunately hit with a stray bullet or a purposeful bullet, and their lives are gone at 19, 20 years old. They're done.
Yeah. I've been to way too many funerals for children. It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare for everybody. It can be stopped.
Everybody's ripped apart from that. Nobody is healthy whenever you have a child die. You know,
right.
you've got the person who shot them. He's ripped apart. They're ripped apart because they're going away. Okay, their family is ripped apart. The family that's bearing that child is ripped to shreds. Going through the court system and trying to get help for burial service, the things that you got to go through. You know, all we can do is pray for those families that they've got that sense of community and inner strength around them at that time.
Well, they have to create that sense of community around them. It's not going to happen unless they make an effort to make... Let me tell you a quick story. Do you have a moment?
Sure. Yeah. We got just a few
okay.
minutes. Just a couple minutes.
In Malcolm Gladwell's book called Outliers, he tells the story of two doctors getting together. And the two doctors were having a cup of coffee, but one was from neighboring town, and one was from Rosetta, Pennsylvania. And one doctor said to the other, "Oh, my goodness, I've got people dying of cancer, strokes, all kinds of, they have problems, the obesity goes on and on and on." And the other doctor looked at him and he said, "You know, the people in Rosetta, they don't die from anything except old age." And he said, they looked at each other and said, "Well, wait a minute, what's going on here?" So they decided to do a study. And the study lasted several months. They went around. There were 2,000 people in Rosetta at that time, and this goes back quite a long ways. They interviewed everybody. They thought maybe it was their ancestry, that they were just dying of, you know, old age, or maybe it was something in the water. Maybe it was they didn't know. So they went through all of these tests and blood tests and everything, and they came out and they reviewed all of their facts. They found that people were overweight in Rosetta. They smoked. They drank. They did everything that other people did in any other community. So what was going on here? They still couldn't figure it out until they decided to look at the structure of the community itself. They went around and they found out that everybody was so connected. They had the church they attended. They had the neighbors in touch with each other. Everybody belonged to a lot of different groups. Maybe they sang in the choir, maybe they belonged to some kind of rotary, all kinds of connections. That was such a tight unit that it kept them healthy. That we are creatures that need support. We need to be affirmations. And as a result of that study, the doctors tried to get the word out about how important community was. And that didn't go too far. But now we're going to reassess that and say, yeah, you know, we can, you have the power
everything.
To keep yourself healthy, but you have got to make connections within the community. You've got to work with your neighbors. You've got to work with your children. You've got to put down your high-tech stuff and really concentrate. If you want a safe, powerful, healthy, resilient family, it takes time and effort. And that was what was going on in Rosetta. So, you know, people can do it, but they got to change some of the things they're doing today and say, I've got to spend more time with my kids.
You know, when a saying that I use to keep myself going through a lot of things is always believe anything is possible with you in the active equation of life.
Right.
And that means being involved and creating whatever it is that is going to keep you going and be beneficial for those around you. So,
absolutely.
All right, well,
and
Stephanie,
then you gain your own identity. You don't have other people persuading you which way you should live your life or how to live your life or who to marry or whatever. So take charge of your own life by being connected. And that means connections with God, too.
Indeed. On any spiritual level that you may believe, you know, there's a higher power and there's many different religions. You know, whatever it is that you believe in that gives you that strength and keeps you going, it's important to hang on to that and inspire that within your kids. Teach that to your kids because they need it just as much.
A wonderful network of support. They'll come and help you out if you need help.
Mm-hmm.
That's a family in itself, and it's your choice. But you don't have to. It's not like you have to go to church. You can still make those connections without going to church, but hopefully later down the road you'll understand that someday you need to have that extra support for your family.
All right, we are down to the last 20 seconds. I'm going to say goodbye real quick. Miss Stephanie, I thank you so much for being on the Your Voice Radio Network with me and sharing all of this with us. Save Kids Now National Network, SKN.com. And you will find Stephanie's information, Street Safe Kids, Safe Neighborhoods, the work she's doing with Dr. Barbara. Again, you know, bless everybody. Have a great day. Stephanie, thank you again very much.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me, Trish. It's been a pleasure talking to you and your audience. If you have any questions,
have a great one now.
Just send us an email. Okay. All right. Take care. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, dear. All right, everybody. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
And that's going to do it for this. Bye-bye. That's going to do it for this broadcast of Your Voice Radio Network, Topics with Trish, and closing out the week with Crime in Our Neighborhoods with crime specialist and violence prevention specialist Stephanie Mann. Everybody have a great day. God bless. Peace out. Thank you.